This is the Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. Join me and listen in as I chat with authors writing on the less gritty side of crime. You won't find graphic sex or violence. You will find intriguing plots, engaging characters, and entertaining writing. Welcome, listeners. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. Chatting with me today in the corner is Cindy Brown, author of the Ivy Meadows Mysteries. Her latest is The Phantom of Oz. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you. The Phantom of Oz is the fifth Ivy Meadows mystery. So what's Ivy up to this time out?
This time, all of the Ivy Meadows mysteries take place in the theater because Ivy is an actor. She's also a part-time private investigator, which helps her out in her sleuthing. And so this time, one of her best friends who's been on tour comes back to town and is performing something called The Wizard, a Space Ozpera, which is a mashup of The Wizard of Oz and various space themes like Star Trek and, you know, it's really silly. Anyway, so her friend's performing in this, and of course she's performing this at a haunted theater, and things go awry. Also, Ivy's friend is having some issues. She's not exactly, she's not well. Yeah.
And so is there really a space Ozpera?
Oh, I wish. You know, one of the really fun things about writing these series is that I get to write plays that I would kind of like to see on stage. I mashed up the sound of music and cabaret in one of them. Put together, let me see, Macbeth had Macbeth as a 1930s like traveling circus, which I thought would be pretty cool. They're all just kind of silly. Oliver Twisted has Oliver Twist, but with ridiculous lyrics in it that have to do with being at sea because it's set on a cruise ship. And by the way, I should say, I do have a book after this, Kill a Lot, which is number 6. I wanted to talk about Phantom, though, because I love this book. I do. I think it's the book that's probably closest to my heart of all of my books.
And in your books, you combine the PI novel with the theater mystery, with the humorous mystery. So what are some of the challenges of combining different subgenres?
Oh, there's a lot. the PI novel is fairly straightforward, and as all mystery writers, I mean, it's not straightforward. In fact, I was at a conference once where Isabel Allende was speaking, and she had just written Ripper, which is her takeoff on Jack the Ripper, like contemporary. And she said, "I am never writing a mystery again. They're too hard." You know, because we have to set up all the clues and the backstory and everything. So that part is the clues, the backstory, making sure everybody's suspicious, has a reason to be suspicious. The difficult thing about humor is just being funny when sometimes, you know, you don't feel like it. Or sometimes the humor just flows, and I'll write a whole scene that I think, and I love it, and it goes in the book just as is. And other times I will write something and it kind of clunks along and I have to go back and fix it. And I do feel that there is because people read them partly for the humor, I do feel like I need to still be funny. And the theater thing that is interesting because, and I hadn't thought about this when I first started it, I'm not sure I would have done it. There's two big issues. One of them is timing, because if you set something during a play, there are characters that are on stage and off stage at certain times. And if something's happening during the play, you have to make sure you know if the character is actually on or off or in the wings or in their dressing room. because people who perform the play will know that. There's also a timing issue in terms of just the week, because actors tend to rehearse Monday through Thursday. It depends if you're professional, you're rehearsing during the day, but they tend to rehearse weekdays and work weekend nights. So you have to have things happen. If something's happening during a performance, it pretty much has to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, maybe Sunday matinee. If it's happening during a rehearsal, you can kind of see where this is going. So the timing right. became very difficult in theater. But the other thing that I had not thought about until I was halfway through The Sound of Murder and on a pretty tight deadline, I suddenly went, I was using The Sound of Music, and I was just using The Sound of Music because I just used Macbeth in the first one. And I suddenly thought, oh my gosh, copyright. And I know, you'd think it would have occurred to me before that. So I said, okay, well, I don't know really what to do about this. I don't know how strict the copyright is, if I can get away with using just, you know, one or two lines of a song or whatever. So luckily there's a great organization called Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts. And I called them up and got an appointment with them and met with an attorney who, he was a professor at the Lewis and Clark College here at the law school. And basically what they do is they use any of the cases to present to their students so they can learn how to deal with different kinds of work. And so students were sitting in on our consultation. But anyway, he said, yeah, you can't use that. And I said, well, I read that if I parody things that I might be able to do that. And he said, sure, but you're going to have to really, really parody everything. So for example, I decided at that point when I was thinking about the parodying to combine the cabaret and The Sound of Murder. And I decided Captain Von Trapp would be named Captain Von Cat for the Kit Kat Club. And he said, yes, okay, you can do that, but spell Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-N. He said, you have to change absolutely everything you can. Huh. And even then, there's some ones that I just can't touch. I'd love to do Winnie the Pooh, but Disney has those rights, and I
would take on Disney. Just wouldn't. They'll show you some of their magic.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you obviously have a lot of knowledge about the theater, and you mentioned that The Phantom of Oz was particularly close to you, so I'm assuming that's because you actually have a background in the theater, and that's contributed to what's gone into your novels, and contributes to the vibrancy of your theatrical settings.
Yes, and thank you for asking. Yeah, so now I'm a writer, and now I'm just a theater geek in terms of the audience. But I started, my first professional gig in theater was when I was 14. I was in the orchestra. I was a musician. I started out my creative life as a musician. And later in college, decided I really wanted to be on top of the stage instead of under it, and started taking vocal lessons and voice lessons. And I worked as a professional actor for about... I shouldn't say that. I worked as a professional actor for years. I made my living as a professional actor for probably about 5 years. And I love the theater. I love it, love it, love it. I miss it. It's just that it's if you're trying to write, it's pretty difficult to do writing and theater. But after being an actor, I became disabled in 1996, and it kind of curtailed my acting career and a couple other things. But I started directing, which I loved. And then I started writing plays, which kind of led to writing everything else. So it was this lovely trajectory. But the theater still has a huge place in my heart. And I miss the collaborative efforts that happens in theater and that kind of wonderful magic that happens when you're on stage and when the audience is there. There's just an energy that you get from live performance. And I love it as an audience member too. I love that still, that connection between the audience and the actors.
And you use the theater as a backdrop for, I mean, of course, murder, but also so for some pretty serious themes like body positivity and troubles in friendship relationships. And but yet you incorporate some elements in your story that keeps it from getting too heavy, such as a seance. So you open up the Phantom of the Oz with the seance and a brief history of theater ghosts. So why are theaters reportedly so haunted?
You know, it's a good question. They are. I mean, it's really funny. If you talk to anyone, I would be surprised to say if there's not a city that doesn't have a theater that doesn't have a ghost. And maybe it's the energy. I'm not sure. I don't think anybody's ever talked about why we report it. But I have worked in several different theaters that were reported to be haunted and may have been. And the other thing is, and this is another thing that could be part of it, I've actually known two people who died on stage or backstage.
Oh.
Yes, so that happens too, because, you know, the show must go on. So sometimes, and people, and also people are doing because they love it, so they're out there loving it. And one fellow was older, and then another one of my friends died very suddenly after backstage. Neil was, I think he was just 50.
Gosh.
So wow. I hope that their ghosts are haunting those, you know, in a nice way, those theaters, because that's where they would love to be.
Okay. Do you have a favorite theater ghost?
Well, you know what? I do. The only one I really think I encountered was at Phoenix Theater. And if that was a ghost, I did get pushed down the stairs at one point. Or I shouldn't say that. I did fall down the stairs. I fell down the stairs. But the stories I really loved, and the stories that are in this book, come from two places. One is the Orpheum Theater in Phoenix, which is a beautiful Art Deco theater and is haunted by several ghosts. And I put some of those stories in here too. People would see someone sitting in the balcony and then walking off, you know, the balcony. And there was also supposed to be a ghost cat that hung out there, and they could tell because they'd hear it meowing up in the rigging. And then one time somebody saw a little cat footprints leading out of a puddle of water, you know.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and then there's also there's a hotel that is not too far from the Orpheum that I'm really familiar with, called the Hotel San Carlos in Phoenix, which is famously haunted and the ghost is called the Lady in White, which I stole for the book. And she is a pretty famous ghost, and I think I've experienced some of the things. I think I've experienced her when I was in the hotel. I worked in the hotel for a while. And she was a young woman who jumped off the top of the hotel in full evening dress in the 1920s.
Oh.
Lenore was her name.
Oh, so they actually know who she really was.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also supposedly the ghosts of children that haunt the basement where there is a well. Which is also figures in The Phantom of Oz. I put it in the theater, but there actually is a well in the bottom of the Hotel San Carlos. It was originally, there was a school on the property, and the school kept the well there. And there are some ghosts of children, supposedly, that fell into the well and haunt the bottom of the San Carlos. Although there seem to be happy kids, the people hear them laughing, so we can't feel too bad. But yes, yeah, so there are ghosts all over it, and a lot of the stuff that I took, the stories I took in here were things that people had relayed to me. I'm not even sure if I made any of them up. I think they're all kind of mashed together from different stories that people told me.
And as I mentioned, stories like that do tend to sort of lighten up the mood of the tone of the book. What other techniques do you use to sort of balance more serious things like fraud and betrayal and body shaming, and yet still keep it humorous?
And first of all, thank you for noticing the serious things, because I love that. I loved adding the serious things. I think it makes the books richer. And the way that I balance that is Ivy herself, a lot of the time, she is, she's very capable, but she's also just she's easily distracted. She is very overly optimistic about things and about her ability to do things. And so I think that adds to the humor a lot. And then, especially in this book, I really enjoy ensemble pieces. I enjoy chapters where you have a bunch of people, you know, talking about the same thing and experiencing the same thing. And that seemed to really work well in this book too, because some of the other characters are not so serious and they might be, you know, they help to lighten the mood too.
And speaking of Ivy, in addition to being an actor, so she's a PI or an almost PI. Now, your theater background obviously helped you with the theatrical aspects of the books, but what kind of research did you do into the life of a private investigator?
Oh, it's so much fun. I love that. There's several things. I'm a member of Sisters in Crime, so I have, you know, gone to the meetings and gotten to talk to people. There's a couple of PIs that came to, well, one, I guess, that comes to our meeting regularly. I'm on a listserv, which is the crime scene listserv. I don't know if you're familiar with it, which has a bunch of first responders, detectives, policemen, I guess policemen are first responders. There's a forensic expert, and you can ask any question you want. A lot of them are also writers, and they like to give you the information. But I also had the great good fortune. I was trying to research something very specific to Arizona at one point, and Stephen Brown, who wrote I think it's The Dummy's Guide to Private Investigating, which I highly recommend. He was on a listserv and he said, you know, Arizona's kind of odd and I would suggest you look for someone there to answer your questions. And I was trying to figure out how to find someone. So I just Googled Private Investigators Arizona and then kind of looked at their reviews. And one review said that the guy was really nice and had a great sense of humor. So I just contacted him out of the blue, and John Hopper, Hopper Investigations. Oh, no, sorry, it's JB Investigations. John Hopper of JB Investigations. I highly recommend him. He has been my go-to private investigator for all of my books now, and he's lovely and answers all of my questions and seems to have a good time doing it.
Oh, so he's an expert in cases both real and fictional.
Yes, yes. He's also, the nice thing is he's also a former policeman. So that helps. He helps me into that stuff as well.
Well, thank you for giving him a shout out.
He'll be very excited.
Speaking of research, what are you working on now? What's next for you? You mentioned book six.
Yes. And so book six is called Kill a Lot. And I love that book too. It's that one is set in a Ren fair, and there's a huge Renaissance fair outside of Phoenix. I mean, huge. I think it's 30 some odd acres and thousands of people. And I always thought it was just kind of funny because it's in the middle of a desert. And so it seems really odd to see everybody strolling along in their velvet and the jousters. I mean, it's a fun place, but it just always seemed like a really comic juxtaposition to me. So that one is set there, and I had great fun researching that one as well, going to Ren fairs and connecting with jousters and things. And then right now I have been working on, I have two things in the work, a book that I have been working on for quite a while that is a more serious mystery set here in Portland. And it's still a traditional mystery. It still has, there's no violence on the page or those kind of things. It feels a little like, I like to say it's kind of like Louise Penny mixed with Michael Connelly.
Oh. An interesting mix.
Yeah, so you get the kind of the traditional mystery and the community, because I think that's really important, of Louise Penny, but it's definitely got a West Coast vibe to it.
Okay.
Yeah, and that book has not been sold yet. I'm also working on, and I kind of want to tell you about it, and then I'm not sure I should since it hasn't been, so I'll just say it's coming. It's coming, we hope.
Okay.
And then the other book I'm working on is, I was writing, I think I mentioned that I started out writing plays, and then I went from writing plays to writing screenplays. I had a couple of short films produced, but no full length ones, but I did have a screenplay that won a couple of awards, and I always loved it. It was called As Time Goes By. I think the book title will be different. And it is set in Hollywood at an old hotel. And again, boy, it's really hard to talk about books that you haven't sold yet. but it's a comedy. And it's been really fun because I have a more, you know, I'm been writing all these humorous mysteries, and now I went to a serious one, and then I'm kind of sliding back to the humorous one, and I love doing that. I love exploring dark for a while, but then coming out into the light and going, okay, now I'm going to be fun and happy, and then I'm going to go explore the serious issue again, because I do, one of the things I love about genre fiction in general is that it lets us explore serious topics, like in The Phantom, it's body issues, and there's also and friendship, and what do you do when someone frauds someone vulnerable? And I love having those serious issues and how you can explore them in genres without sounding like you're, you know, sermonizing. You can really, I think it's a great place. I think science fiction and mystery especially are great places to look at social issues from a point of view, a story point of view that allows people to be interested in them and think about them without feeling like they're being hit over the head.
Yes, and the best fiction always kind of both mirrors real life or at least teaches you something about it without making you feel like, you know, you've been attacked by a school marm.
Exactly.
And so to find your great fiction, where can readers buy a copy of The Phantom of Oz or the other Ivy Meadows mysteries?
Well, I am a huge fan of independent bookstores, so of course I'm going to recommend them for them first. Most indie bookstores have online ordering possibilities. And if you're looking for the physical book, I know bookstores in Portland and Vancouver, Portland, Oregon, which is where I live, Vancouver, Washington, I know they have it. I know some of the bookstores in Phoenix, Arizona have it, including, I think they still have it, the Poisoned Pen Bookstore. And then, of course, you can also get it online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and iBooks and Kobo. I think that's it.
Bookshop.org now.
Thank you. Is that the indie one?
Yes.
Thank you. Also, I want to say that one of the nice things, I don't have audiobooks, but they are available through the Library of Congress as recorded books recording the Library for the Blind. I think it's actually now writing maybe for the print disabled. So anyone who cannot read typical text because they're blind or dyslexic or have any whatever issues with typical text can get those books free from the Library of Congress. So that's been really cool.
Oh, excellent. And where can readers connect with you?
I am on Facebook and sometimes on Twitter. I sometimes fall off of Twitter. But I also have a website, which is cindybrownwriter.com. And I have a newsletter that goes out monthly. It's called the Slightly Silly Newsletter. And it's been very fun and very popular with my readers because I always have slightly silly things, like a good picture of where to hide the body, and usually a trivia question and some silly, just I usually put down random stuff that makes me laugh at the very end. So that's fun, and you can sign up for the newsletter. And I should also mention that about a year ago, I started a website called plentynice.com, and it is just it's a good news website. It also has books and media, films, music that is uplifting and makes people feel good. And we concentrate a little bit more on the smaller news. I feel like there's a lot of great news, good news sites out there. I'm really loving John Krasinski's CGN right now, or SGN, some good news. But this one concentrates a little bit more on small things, people that are things that are people are just doing for each other. And it's been lovely. And that is also a blog post goes out weekly for that. And that's been a really nice addition to what I'm doing.
So that's plentynice.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And we could definitely all use some good news these days.
Yes. And it's nice to just look for good news. People send me, that's the other cool thing, is people just send me good news now. How nice is that?
Oh, that is lovely. And hopefully they will send you the good news that they just read and loved your book.
Yes, that too. Please do.
Well, thank you for chatting with me today, Cindy.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. My guest today was Cindy Brown, author of The Phantom of Oz, The Fifth Ivy Meadows Mystery. I'm Alexia Gordon, your host. Until next time, goodbye.
You've been listening to The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. Thank you for joining me for another chat with an author writing on the less gritty side of crime. A new episode is out every other Wednesday. Subscribe on your favorite podcast listening platform, and if you enjoy the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review. Follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at @podcast_cozy and on Facebook at The Cozy Corner Podcast. This has been your host, Alexia Gordon. Thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.